Welcome to Conversations with Big Rich. This is an interview-style podcast. These interviewed are all involved in the off-road industry. Being involved, like all of my guests are, is a lifestyle, not just a job. I talk to past, present, and future legends, as well as business owners, employees, media, and land use warriors, men and women who have found their way into this exciting and addictive lifestyle we call off-road. We discuss their personal history, struggles, successes, and reboots. We dive into what drives them to stay active and off-road. We all hope to shed some light on how to find a path into this world that we live and love and call off-road.
Whether you're crawling the Red Rocks of Moab or hauling your toys to the trail, Maxxis has the tires you can trust for performance and durability. Four wheels or two. Maxxis tires are the choice of champions because they know that whether for work or play, for fun or competition, Maxxis tires deliver. Choose Maxxis. Tread victoriously.
Have you seen 4LO magazine yet? 4LO magazine is a high-quality, well-written, four-wheel drive-focused magazine for the enthusiast market. If you still love the idea of a printed magazine, something to save and read at any time, 4LO is the magazine for you. 4LO cannot be found in stores, but you can have it delivered to your home or place of business. Visit 4LOmagazine.com to order your subscription today. On today's episode of Conversations with Big Rich, we have Nate Hurst. Nate is a rock crawler. He is a spotter. He is the co-promoter of the Delta Classic Rock Crawl, and he's been around our scene for quite a while now. Most of the people that are competing now would know who he is, whether they're East or West Coast. Nate, I want to say thank you so much for coming on and sharing your story with us.
Yeah, glad to be here. Thanks for having me on, Rich.
So let's jump right in, and I'm assuming that you're a Utah boy.
Yes, sir. So I was born in Taylorsville, Utah, born and raised. I really only lived in two houses as a kid and then, you know, kind of struck out on my own after that. But yeah, so just in Taylorsville. And now I'm in West Jordan, which is like several miles away is all. So yeah, kept it pretty tight on my location.
Okay. And growing up, what kind of activities were you into?
So, you know, I was born in 83, so like most kids my age, I mean, we played all of the sports, right? That was just a part of growing up when I was a kid.
Right.
And sadly, it's not really a part of growing up now, it seems, at least with my kids and their friends. But yeah, played basketball, baseball, soccer, a little bit of football. Like, I was always playing sports and riding bikes and skateboarding, and just, it seems like most of it is geared around being outside, honestly. So.
And was that something that the outdoors, did that come naturally with the parents as well? Did you guys go camping and that kind of stuff?
100%. Yeah. We didn't have a lot of money, you know, like a lot of people. And my parents really enjoyed camping themselves, and with four kids. So my siblings were all very close in age. So my parents had four kids in 5 years, which,
wow,
as a parent now, I think is insane. Like, I do not know how they do it, but I respect that they just got four kids and got it done, right? And then they were done. So we spent a lot of time outdoors. We went camping. Obviously, Utah has amazing national and state parks, and we just grew up going to those places, catching lizards and, you know, whatever. It's always been a part of my life. So,
And how were you as a student?
So I was actually a really good student. School came pretty easy to me. And then I got to high school, and you'll see this theme with a lot of people, I'm sure, especially rock crawlers. I got to high school and I got distracted by stuff, but I still managed to stay on the honor roll, you know, a 3 and above GPA pretty easily. I took a ton of college classes in high school through concurrent enrollment, and it was just, I don't know, it was just easy. But honestly, that kind of didn't set me up well for how hard college was going to be, right? Because that takes actual effort.
Right.
But, yeah, it was kind of a curse, honestly, like doing well in school pretty easily was kind of a curse, but yeah.
I agree with that. I always took tests really well, which helped in high school. You didn't have Absolutely. To, you know, you didn't have to apply as much. College, there was a lot more application needed. Especially when I got into my major, going for my AA, it was, you know, it's all kind of the same, just about the same as high school, except, you know, it's a little, you know, you have to do it yourself. You can't rely on the teacher to give you the information like they do in high school. So, yeah, I get it totally.
Yeah, agreed.
So then what did, after high school, did you jump into college?
So I did some community college for a couple of years, but I started working so young. I was just always working, it seemed like. And so when I tried to actually do college, like even in high school, man, I was working, you know, 20 some hours a week, working nights and stuff. And then once I graduated from high school, I just kept working and started working full time. And so I was going to community college at night, and I never really found what it was that I wanted to do. And I got so sick of taking like four classes and having four teachers tell you, go home and read, you know, pages 22 through 90. And it wasn't doable for me. It Right. took way too much of my time, and I just had other things I wanted to do, you know? So I never got that degree, which has been okay so far. Right. But we'll see long-term if I regret that. I don't know.
So what kind of work did you do while you were in high school?
So in high school, I worked at the Delta Center. You know, that's where the Jazz play. I did concessions there and worked in the catering area. And that was when I was like 13, 14. And I got away with it because we just said I was 16 and I was a tall kid. So they just kind of believed it. So, and then once I finally turned 16, I started working there legit. And the guy that was in charge was like, I knew you weren't 16. But then after that, I went on to work at a restaurant, the Mayan, which is, you know, one of Larry H. Miller's big things that has the divers and stuff that jump off the cliff into the water. And that was really only worth it because it was super easy work. And that's where I actually met my wife. So it actually worked out really well there. But
were you both servers or what?
We were both food runners. So we're the ones that just take the food to the tables. Right. But and mixed in there as well, I worked at Bradshaw Auto Parts, which was really fun. Kind of gave me like a little bit of a foray into automotive stuff, and which was really fun. But yeah.
So did you after that, working those three jobs, high school, is that when you, what were you doing when you were in college? Same thing?
So I was working at Bradshaw for a little while I was college age, you know, out of high school. And then I went to work for Salt Lake County in land records because my family members, my siblings had all worked for the Salt Lake County Recorder's Office. Is a good temp job. And, you know, if you were lucky or unlucky now, looking back, you'd get hired on permanently, right? Doing that government work, you know, but.
Are you still there then? Is that why you said that?
So I'm not. So okay. I worked there for 10 years and then kind of realized that, I don't know, that public sector wasn't really for me, and dealing with the politics and the drama of all of it, of how long you're there is like the number one most important thing. It got old. So I got out of that, but it was a good 10 years. You know, I worked there for a long time. So.
And when did you get married? At what point?
So I was 22 years old, which looking back feels really young, but you know, Utah standards, it's really not that young. It's maybe actually about a year, probably about a year older than average for Utah, right?
Right.
Kids get back from their missions and get married immediately. So, yeah, 22 years old. We'd been dating for 4 years at that point. So no one was really shocked that we got married, right? Not a real shocker, but yeah.
And you were working at that point then? You were
at the county.
For the county.
Yep.
Right. Okay.
Yep. So I had, you know, what we thought was a stable job, and my wife had a good job. She just barely left Men's Warehouse to work for a drug rehab, actually, just on a whim. A guy she worked with said, hey, come work with me over here. And that's about the same time we bought a house. Right after we got married, we bought a house, right? And she just randomly, like after working there for like 2 months, got laid off. So similar to Ryan's story in that, you know, that, you know, we just bought a house and one of us got laid off.
But, right.
Yeah. The difference in my story is this was while the market was still going up. This was early 2007. And so we bought more house than we could afford because they're giving loans to anybody, right?
Right.
And then she got laid off. Luckily, she got a good job right after that. But then the market crashed, and it was ugly for a while. And we, you know, we didn't know what we were going to have to do, but we hung in there, stuck it out, and you know, 15 years later, we ended up selling that house for twice as much as we paid for it. Right?
So perfect.
It worked out.
And kids, how many
kids? Yeah. So I have three kids. I have a 10-year-old boy, a 7-year-old boy, and a 3-year-old girl. So we all know which one's the spoiled one.
Oh yeah. So, the 3-year-old.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. She is, she has all of us wrapped around her little fingers for sure. So
but that's okay great. Though. That's okay.
Yep, it is.
It's all right for daddy to have a little princess.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I love it.
So then after the county, what came next?
So after the county, I went to work in Colorado for actually a fracking fuel company. And the plan was to move there just above Fort Collins in Wellington. And we were all excited. We had the one kid at that point. And our house here in Utah just would not sell. And the job out there was actually seemed a little bit rougher than it was supposed to be, more hours and stuff. And so bailed on that after 3 months, unfortunately. So came back to Utah, kind of felt stuck a little bit. Started working worked a couple little random jobs in the tech sector, and then finally got hired on at the bank where I'm working now. So
you're a banker?
Yeah. Global treasury banking. It's like the most boring thing ever you can explain, but yeah, it was really awesome until 3 months ago. Our bank kind of collapsed in outstanding fashion.
Uh-oh.
So, yeah. So it was very... Yeah,
it wasn't that one that we heard about down in Silicon Valley, was it?
It absolutely was. Silicon Valley Bank, yeah.
Shit.
Yeah, so I've been there for 9 years. My wife's been there for 16 years. She also works there. So yeah, it's been an exciting few months with all that stuff going on. Just kind of wondering what's going to happen next type of deal. Not what I expected to be doing.
Right.
Or to be worried about, you know, at this age in my life, but it is what it is, you know.
So what's the plan then? I mean, are you guys still working for them? Or they haven't
weren't
they taken over by the feds?
So got taken over by the feds for a few weeks and then sold to a bank out of North Carolina. We are both still employed and just kind of riding it out to see what happens. We're both not too excited about finding something new. And so we figured we'd kind of see how it goes first before we jump ship. But I also just don't know what I want to be when I grow up, Rich, you know, like
it was, weird. I was 42 when I figured it out finally.
Yeah. So I've still got 3 years then. That's good to know.
Yeah. That's when I became an event promoter, but you just became an event promoter.
It's true. I did.
But before we get into that, let's talk about how you got involved with off-road.
Sure. So growing up, my dad had a VW obsession, like funniest thing ever, knowing that I'm a rock crawler, right? But my dad just had Volkswagens around all the time. Like some of my fondest memories are driving his little red bus. He had a red Volkswagen bus, and we would cram the kids in there and drive that thing to, now this terrifies me, but he like built beds in it, right? And put up shutters and all that stuff.
Right.
And we drive that thing to freaking Disneyland. Like, I can't imagine that now. Like, I can't believe that we did it. But I think most of the reason he loved Volkswagen so much is because he was just like a big do-it-yourselfer, like, and cheap, right? Like,
right.
Everything had to be cheap and had to be something he could do himself. So I think that's why he was into Volkswagen so much. I bet he would still have that bus, except some stupid kid in a Bronco hit him in the snow. and wrecked it. So some years ago, but otherwise I bet he'd still have it. I keep bugging him to get another one, but
I like that. He's into Volkswagens and you keep bugging him. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Bugging him. Get it.
Yeah, I started off in a 54 Volkswagen Bug.
Oh, that's awesome.
And yeah, they had a couple of Beetles over the years.
They just had some fun stories. Him and his buddies, they had a story about, I think they went to Wyoming or somewhere to buy a motor for one of them. And they just put it inside of it, right? And then on the way back on the highway, the motor in it died, and they swapped it out on the side of the road. And I've always loved that story. It's just so funny. Like, it speaks to the simplicity of them, right? And
absolutely,
also how garbage they were.
Well, there
also
was
how terrible they were.
There was a Friday that I was driving from. I grew up in the San Francisco Bay Area, just south of San Francisco, and I was, for some reason, I was heading up into the city, and I dropped a cylinder in the engine that I had just rebuilt. I mean, it was only probably had 500 miles on it. So I called my dad and I said, hey, grab my tow bar, get your truck, come pick me up. But on the way, stop it at Bug Foreman's and pick up a new cylinder. There's one waiting. And, you know, so a cylinder, a piston, you know, the piston and a rod. And so he came and got me. It was probably, 4 or 5 o'clock. By 8, 9 o'clock that night, I was back out cruising in it.
Oh, it's amazing.
You know, pulling the engine, changing that cylinder, throwing the head back on, firing it up and out cruising. Yep.
That's so crazy. Wow. Yeah, I can't even imagine that. If that happened to me and anything else, I'd be calling the dealer or something, right? You can't even work on anything nowadays. But
oh, exactly. Too complicated.
Yeah. Yeah. But anyways, his like desire to work on stuff himself kind of like molded me a little bit, right? As a younger kid, I didn't want to work on stuff with him. Like, no young kids do usually, right? But then once I up and turned 16, the most exciting thing ever was getting a driver's license, you know? Kids nowadays are like, I don't know if I even want to get mine. Seems like a lot of responsibility, man. It was the best when I was a kid. So
freedom.
Yeah. Yeah. So I had a couple cars and then I got into an Isuzu Trooper and we tried to kind of off-road in that. Of course, once you get four-wheel drive, you just want to go off-road, right?
Yes.
And so we'd go out in the fields. We'd slough school and go out in the fields, which is actually like right where my house is now, and just go bomb around in the dirt and think we're doing really cool, hard stuff. And then my brother bought an XJ. So this is, you know, the beginning of the end for me. He bought a 92 XJ, 2-door, 4-cylinder, 5-speed. And it was just the coolest thing ever. It had a 3-inch lift and 31s. Like, I just loved that Jeep. And one day he was like, I'm going to sell this thing. Do you want to buy it? And I'm like, yeah. So scraped together some money, took out a little loan for my dad, and I bought that XJ. And that's where it all really began, right? Taking off the sway bars and, yeah, denting stuff and breaking stuff. and that's like when I was 18 years old. So I was just finishing up high school. It was, you know, the spring before school ended. And my uncle was like, hey, you should bring that down to Jeep Safari. And I was like, what? And he explained what Easter Jeep Safari Moab is to me. And that was, again, like the beginning of an era as well, because I'd never been before. And so me and my buddy left school, went down to Moab and just beat around in that thing. It was open, you know, no lockers. And when we got down there, I was like, my uncle was an experienced rock crawler. And I'm like, what trail are we going to do? And he's like, Moab Rim. And I'm like, okay, let me read it in the book. And I remember reading that Charles A. Wells book, right? The Moab Trail Guide. And
right.
It just says like the first mile of this, like, still gets my heart pumping or something like that in the description. And I was like, why are we doing this trail? Can we do an easier one? But no, we went out and it was a blast. You know, I seem to have some pretty good instincts behind the wheel. And that was just ever since then, you know, I've been going down to Jeep Safari and wheeling. So it was great.
And so have you been like every year since?
So the last year I went, they canceled it in 2019, right? Or no, right. 2019 was the
last year. 20. It was 20.
20 they canceled it. Okay.
Because right. That's when COVID first hit.
Yeah, okay. I have a hard time with the years. So 19 was the, I went every year through 19. That was the last year that I went. And ever since then, the COVID thing kind of just killed it for me a little bit. And now the trails aren't like, there's a few really good trails I enjoy down there. But as a whole, if I'm driving the same amount of time, Sand Hollow is just a better fit. So it's kind of sad. And I expect I'll go back to Jeep Safari one day. But yeah, I just kind of grew out of it a little bit. So.
When you graduate to a JK or a four door, and you got the car seats in there for the little ones, and
Exactly.
that's when you'll start going back to Moab and do the
Yeah.
scenic stuff.
Sure. So the last couple of years that I went, I took my oldest kid with me, like once he turned 5 or something like that. I said he could come with me. We went down there, we'd camp and stuff. But another reason is because, like, when we started going, we'd cram like 10 of our closest friends in a cheap hotel room
Right.
just to make it affordable, right? We're all poor kids. And now that's not a thing. There's not a cheap hotel room in Moab. It's like probably about the same price as a hotel in Paris or something like that at this point. It's outrageous down there. So that was another reason we kind of strayed away from it. But yeah, it's
Sand Hollow is
still
much
Mo.
better that for that.
Oh, yeah. And not having a trailer everywhere is so much better. But yeah, and then that XJ, I ended up breaking stuff on it. And my uncle had a plasma cutter, and I got carried away. And I cut that one in half and tubed it out and put Wagoneer 44s on it. And it was a blast, man. But it eventually, when I bought the house, it was like, well, I got to make the mature decision and sell the XJ. I'd rather have a house. But
All
that's
right.
okay. We all get there at some point, so no big deal.
But that started your obsession with XJs.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And how many
It
have you
was.
owned?
So I had that one. I had a Comanche that I had this big plan of moving a, like putting a 4.0 in. So I bought a donor XJ for that one. The Comanche had problems and pissed me off. So I sold that and the donor. And then in 2008, I bought the current one that I have, Snowflake. So had that thing for 15 years, which is disgusting because XJs usually don't last that long. But as you know, I made some modifications to make it last a little bit longer. But yeah, so I finally bought the 93 in 2008. And yeah, I've just had that thing forever. It's ridiculous. But yeah, and then I think I probably will have it forever at this point. I don't really ever see selling it. So
Got to have
things
one that
like,
your oldest can start driving.
yeah, oh man, he would freak out
Especially
for
after you
sure.
get your buggy
So
done.
yeah, eventually.
Because you're building a buggy, correct?
Yes, I have been building a buggy. It's been a few years now. I took a whole year off of working on it while we were moving and getting settled in the new house and stuff. And then I was making some good headway on it over the last few months, but then the work drama hit, and I've cooled off on working on it, kind of. But the motivation will come back, and I'll get it done. So
Right.
I'm not worried.
Cool.
It'll happen.
So then, I guess plans for the future are kind of might be kind of on hold to see what happens work-wise, since you're both working for the same
Yeah.
company, and kind of things are in limbo. I mean, you're still working, but you don't know
Yeah,
what the new
yeah.
the new bank is going to do with the old bank, right?
Sure. Yeah, it's definitely kind of a tense time for sure. But I'm still going to go rock crawling, I tell you that.
Right.
So, yeah, getting excited to get back out there a little bit for sure. But we started doing that, and I mean, it's insane to think that I've even known you guys for this long. But I did Delta in 2014 for the first time. That was my first competition. And that's, I mean, let me fast forward even farther back from that. I went to, like, I don't know if it was U-Rock or Supercrawl, but I went to one at Rocky Mountain Raceway, and I went to one in Ogden in a like stadium place. And I just thought, like, this is the coolest thing ever, right? Like, I was fresh out of high school and I had my Jeep. I was just like, I can't believe people do this. Like, it's so amazing. Like the Carnivore was there. Remember that cool buggy?
Oh, yeah.
That was during those. It was like the heydays, right? And they had the huge obstacles at Rocky Mountain Raceway. And I'm just like, I can't believe these guys get to do it. Like, I wish I was that lucky. But, and then fast forward 10 years or so, and you know, I met Ryan and he talked me into Delta and I did that. And then, you know, then I loved it so much and we won. And so I was like, let's go to Rangeley, like he said, when you talked to him. And we won Rangeley with you guys. And I was like, this is the coolest thing ever. Like, we're doing it, right? Like, we're going to be rock crawling competitors. And it's just been.
You go out two events really, and two wins.
Yeah. Yeah. It really was like a can't slow down now. We went to Idaho X Rocks and won there as well. And then, like, we just got hooked on it big time. And finding someone that's as committed to it as you are and Ryan, right? Like once I had a spotter that I knew I could count on, it was like, crap, like, we're going to do this thing. So, and we have some ridiculous stories with rock crawling. Like, some of the stuff we've done is so crazy. And to you, the drives are really short, right? Like, we've talked about that before. You guys drive across the country five times a year or something. Right. But to me, like, I never would have thought we'd be driving to Goldendale, Washington for a weekend, right?
Yep.
Like, I never thought we'd, you know, drive like almost 12 hours each way for at max, like 80 minutes on course. It's just it's the funniest thing ever to break it down that way. But it's also the best. Like, some of the times we've had have been so amazing and met some ridiculously awesome people in the times that we've been on course and stuff. It's wild.
It becomes a way of life.
Yeah, you absolutely.
Know, it gets into your bloodstream, you might say. And, you know, you just, it's something that you got to do, or that, you know, cause the people are what really make the sport.
Yeah, for sure. You they know. Are.
And it doesn't matter if you're trail wheeling or competing.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. Yeah. Trail wheeling was always a real blast, you know, go out there with your friends. And we were always kind of competitive anyways, me and my friends, like, we'd try to pick a harder line than the person that was before us and show them up a little bit. So the competition aspect was like super natural for me. And I still don't get to this day when I ask someone why they don't compete and they're like, oh, I'm just not competitive. And Ryan and I have always joked like, oh, you're afraid you're going to lose. Like, it's so funny.
The big fish, little pond syndrome.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, everybody will go out and buy an X comp buggy.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the first time I witnessed that, we were doing an event in Disney, Oklahoma, and I look up and I see Joel Randall's old ARCA car, which was a national champion car. And sure. I mean, the paint job was one of those that you just knew it. And I looked up there and I'm like, why is Joel here and not competing? What's going on? Found out that Joel had sold the car. And it was a local guy in Oklahoma that had bought it. And I said, somebody go up and ask him, you know, once they told me the story, I said, somebody go ask him why he's not competing. And the guy goes, oh, I'm not competitive. You know, I don't have a competitive bone in my body. And I'm like, then why did you buy a car like that? If you're not trying to outdo everybody else, you know, why did you buy a national championship car? It doesn't make sense to me.
I don't get the not competitive thing anyways. Like, how does that bloodline survive, right? how are you not a competitive person? Like, day to day, like what do you do? Like, how are you not competitive? I don't understand.
They're not the hunters, they're the gatherers.
Yeah, seriously. Like, you're a gatherer, bro. I don't know. It's weird. But yeah, it was supernatural for me to just want to compete and want to do ridiculous stuff with my friends is kind of what it comes down to. But man, we were at Idaho X Rocks. This was that first, it was 2015. And that event was awesome. It was so fun. Small event, just like Delta, right? And so we're there and Ryan's big TJ on 42s and he's before me on course and he goes up over this huge bonus line and it's a big drop down the backside. And so I'm on course and we have some autonomy at this point, even though I've only been competing for like a year and we're on radio and he's like, well, are you going around for the bonus line? I was like, yeah, I'm doing the bonus line. And I drop down over it and I have too much speed and my XJ is too low and crappy and my nose just sticks in. And that's the one that I have the amazing picture of, that thing standing straight up on its nose. And of course it went forward. And at that point I had a cage that I like, it was a hybrid cage kind of over the body and stuff. And it just crushed it. And to make matters worse, my gas cap, like on my fuel cell, popped off and fuel is flying out, and Tate and Todd are on the mic saying, "Get out, get out, get out." And I'm like, "Oh man, this is not great." So we scramble out, we get it tipped over, take it back to our camp just over across the way, and use a high lift jack to bend the cage back up. And we're like, let's get back out on course. So the next course we go on, sort of a similar course, you have to go down and you have to go up and over this culvert that's like halfway buried in the ground. And no lie, I go over it and the traction was way better than I thought. And I seriously stuck the bumper in again and endoed it again. And it was just two courses in a row, I endoed the stupid thing. And that's when we're like, "Hey, we're done now. Like, that's like a hard stop, right?" And I get it home and it is just twisted every which way. It is insane. So that's why it looks like it does now. That's why I cut the unibody off behind the driver's seat. Like, that thing was so mangled. And at that point I was like, man, I don't know. But it never at any point in that, the whole point of this is like, I never thought I'm done with competing. It was just, man, I got to get this thing fixed up so I can go back out. Like, it was just like, I got to get it fixed so I can keep competing. Like, you think I'd be like, if I was smart, I would have been like, competing stupid. It ruins everything, right? Like, it just makes you do dumb stuff. But no, it was never that. It was always, yeah, I got to get it fixed and get back out there. So obviously I did. So
what are some other good stories about competing? Talk about the time coming up to Vernal for the first time.
Oh,
what was that like? Or not Vernal, I mean Rangeley.
Oh, so Rangeley, going there for the first time, it was so weird. Like, we were so nervous. We were so nervous that it was going to be like, people were going to big time us, right? And not want to talk to us or something. We're the new guys. But man, it was the exact opposite. Like, we got the instructions off your website or something, how to get there. And Rangeley's just this tiny little town. And we go around the backside and the weirdest part, I think, is rolling in at night and everyone's just like in their tents or whatever. Some people are out partying, right? And just like, okay, I guess we're going to camp here. Like, that was a really weird thing back then. So we just camp and we get up in the morning and we're both freaking out. Like, what is WeRock going to be like? Is it going to be crazy? Like, is everyone going to be way too cool for us? But it was the best. Like, we met Bryce, Santee, and Parker, and we're hanging out with them and their little Blue Samurai. And that was also the beginning of something, right? We competed against them a ton.
Right.
And I think Jim Horn's daughter was competing in a big old YJ or something like that. And then some Toyota guys. And it was just, yeah, we were over the moon to be there, but we were super nervous. But I still get nervous before courses. So I don't know. That's really changed. But so we're out on course, and we, on this one course, we're like, okay, when we get to that gate, it's kind of off camber. We're going to have to power out of it. And we hook up a spotter strap and Ryan's like, go, go, go. And I totally like barely hit the throttle and roll, and it rolls over and I'm on my lid. It's totally upside down. And this is the best part of this story, is I'd never been completely upside down sitting there before. And so I just pull my harness, right? Pull the tab off my lap belt. And I drop on my stupid head. Ryan is going to love to hear this story because he still laughs about this one. It's like, what were you doing? Like, I didn't put my hands up. I seriously just dropped on my head. And I crawl out. And he's like, let's push it over and keep going. And so it's on its lid. And we push it. And it's downhill. So we push it. And it rolls over and lands on the wheels. And the wheels nearest us keep going up. And we're like, this thing's going to roll down the hill like six times and kill people. But luckily it settled back down and I was just like, oh man, like we really didn't plan for that. Like, that was a spur of the moment thing. Like, let's roll this thing over. But I got back in and we finished that course. So, and went on to win that weekend. It was awesome.
That is great.
Yeah, it was. I swear that like the hard times on course, especially if they work out, like you're forged in the fire and it just makes you love it more. And we've had plenty of that on course, plenty of hard times. So, but it's always just been a blast. And then like freak, not long after that, Jesse started the Silver State Rock Crawl, right?
Right.
In Reno. And we were like, you know what? Like, we'd met Jesse. We thought Jesse was the coolest. never really talked to him much because we're still just these little peons, but we're like, we got to go out there and support Jesse. So this was probably like 2016. And so we take Ryan's TJ out there. It might have been 15 even. I don't remember. We take Ryan's TJ out there. It's like a 9-hour drive, right? And we go on our first course. We don't have a lot of experience with this TJ because he just got it. And we break a stub shaft. And on that same course, we roll it all the way over outside of the course. We didn't even finish. And so it was broken, right? It also broke the fuel cell. And so we just drove 9 hours to get there. We got there at like 3 a.m. and slept and then did that, broke it immediately. And we're like, cool, I guess we'll go home. So that's one of those stories of, you know, 18 hours of driving for less than 10 minutes of trail time or of course time. And it's just like, again, it wasn't ever like, what are we doing? Why are we doing this? It was like, man, we got to get this solved, like figure out what we need to do better. And that's always been like, especially after competitions, we won't even turn on the radio on the way home. Ryan and I just talk about what we need to improve. And that's weird, right? Like even those long drives, we just talk about what we can do better, what we thought went well on the courses and what didn't. And again, that's the competitive spirit, you know?
Trying to figure out how to make it better.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And then it gets even better. The next year is when it changed to Supercrawl, still out in Reno. We drove out there. This time we took my Jeep and his CJ, and we're just going out there to compete. And up the hill to the courses, his CJ loses the 9-inch, like ring and pinion just broke up the dirt hill on the way to the courses before even running a course.
Wow.
So really, like, I think the point of these stories is Ryan is really resilient or stupid. He's had such bad luck.
But, I like the word resilient.
Yeah, yeah. I think stupid's better, but well, yeah. So he broke his CJ. I went on to finish my courses and got second, but a dude complained that my XJ had like 60% body instead of 66% body to fit in my class. And that guy was conveniently in third place, and it was after the competition had ended. He complained. So he got bumped to second. Jesse hated to do it, but he did it anyways. And I got bumped to third, but I have the big check for like $45. So you hang it up in my garage, and I just scratched out the third place and put second place on it. So as far as I'm concerned, it was second place, but that dude had 40s, man. He was in a linked Toyota on 40s, and he complained about my XJ, which was on 33s at that point. Like,
I would have told him to man up and take his panties off and put boxers on. And quit whining.
Dude, he, like, the best part about that whole situation was after it happened on social media, I, like, kind of put what happened, right? Explained the story. And the amount of people that I didn't even know that came to my aid to be like, that dude sucks. Nate, you're awesome. Was, like, really, like, reassuring, you know? And at that point, I was kind of like, okay, we're, like, we're making it here. In the rock crawling scene, like, we're getting somewhere, right? People were realizing that we've got something, whether it's resiliency or whether we're stupid, right? Like, we've got something and we want to do this. We're passionate about it. So that actually ended like on a good note. Right. But I don't know. It's like those stories are the wildest thing. Like, I remember we were about to get on course in Baghdad. The first time we got into Baghdad. And like I said, I still get jitters. Like before my first course, and Ryan's the same way. He'll try to say he's not, but we're nervous. Like, I'm nervous to get on course, whether I'm spotting or I'm driving, right? Like, two different challenges that are both hard and both nerve-wracking.
Right.
So we're about to get on course, and this is a cute story. You'll like this one, Rich. And I'm just freaking out, like, telling Ryan, like, on the over the radio, is like, dude, I'm freaking out. Like, this, like, what are we going to do? This is when we're in pro mod, right? And I'm just like, what are we going to do? These courses are so hard. And he's like, dude, remember, we're good at this. And I'm like, oh, it's like the coolest thing anybody's ever said, right? Like, we'd only been doing it for a couple of years, but we're having decent success. And I'm like, dude, I'm making a sticker of that one day. Like, when I one day have a buggy, I'm making a sticker that says, remember, we're good at this. So it's going to be right where my eyes, like right in my eye line. Because, dude, just even like, even in life, right? It's important to remember that you're capable, right? Like, you can do hard things.
Right.
And so that was... it's probably the nicest thing Ryan's ever said to me, you know, on course or before or after a course. But
Because he can get a little hot-headed.
Dude, he used to get so – I'm glad you brought that up. He used to get so mad on course. A couple times he'd, like, throw his helmet and just, like, get pissed off, kick his radio off and throw it on the floor. Like, he would get so mad. And I know he mentioned this on your podcast, too, that he said, like, wow, this whole, like, not getting mad thing is really working out. But before that, like, that day that he said that, he was like – he's like, hey, so I decided, like – I'm going to try to just like stay cool and stay calm on course and not yell at you. And I was like, wow. So like what I've been doing for all these years to you, good idea. Like, wow, what a like groundbreaking idea to just chill out. But he really has brought it down quite a bit. He still gets mad sometimes, but he pouts a little bit or I pout a little bit and it's fine. We're a cute married couple like that, I guess. I don't know. Dude, we have spent so, because when we travel to events, right, a lot of times it's just me and Ryan. And when we were traveling for the 2021 season with We Rock and Supercrawl, I realized while I was like taking a picture of our food or something like that, taking a cute picture, I realized, and I said in my post, like, I for sure been on more dates with Ryan than I have with my wife, like probably 5 to 1. Like, it is so ridiculous the amount of time we spend together, even just having a meal, just the two of us versus me having a meal just with my wife. Dude, that never happens. So it's, yeah, it really is.
Hopefully your wife hasn't gotten jealous.
She jokes about that. And then there's other times, like when he calls me when he's driving home from work, because he lives in Tooele, drives 45 minutes each way. He'll call me and I'll just like drop what I'm doing to go out in the garage and talk to Ryan. And she's just like, oh, okay, your boyfriend's on the phone. So maybe I shouldn't have said that. That some people are going to, you know, raise an eyebrow to that. But dude, we just.
No, they'll understand.
Yeah. Yeah. That relationship is crazy because, you know, we've got each other's lives in our hands out on course and spend so much time together and talking. And it's, I don't know, it really is like a freaking brotherhood. And that's not even just like between me and him. That's all the other competitors too. Like the amount of help that the crafty veterans of the sport would give us when we were new, like, dude, you wouldn't expect that at all. You'd expect them to like have these trade secrets that they're keeping safe, right? But dude, like Jesse and Dave, they've given us some amazing tips over the years. Even when it's like on a course that they've already run, Jesse's like, hey, go up there and push that rock off with your front tire and then come back down and do the regular line. And we're like, what? And sure enough, it worked great. So I don't know. Those relationships with people are something that I'll cherish forever for sure.
Cool. We've
met some amazing people.
So let's talk about Rock Crawlers for Sale. Isn't that the page you own?
Yeah. Yeah. So, me and a couple buddies started rockcrawlersforsale.com in 2013. It's hard to imagine.
Wow, okay.
But yeah, we started it forever ago. That's actually what made me break into social media. I was holding on strong to not get on Facebook or Instagram or anything. And I kind of wish I wouldn't have because it's just a time waste. But so yeah, we started that just to kind of give people a way to be able to sell their rock crawlers. And this is before Facebook Marketplace. So really your options at that point were like post it for sale locally, like on for us, it's KSL Classifieds or Craigslist. Or you could post it on like Pirate 4x4 and have everyone in the world make fun of you, right? And say you're asking too much. And so we were like, oh dude, all the pores.
I could build that same thing for $200.
Yeah, man. It must be Tuesday type of posts, right? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. It's yeah. And so we were like, you know what? Like, this is something that we see that's wide open in the market and needs to just be captured by someone. So why not us? And so, yeah, the business model was to get people to post their listings on there and pay a small fee to post it. And then we posted social media. And I've been doing that for freaking 10 years almost. So it's crazy. But it had its real heydays, you know, where I was getting tons of traffic and then it kind of slowed down a little bit. But it's still kicking and making me some pretty passive income. So I'm the only surviving partner in that endeavor, which is fine by me as long as something doesn't go wrong with it. But
I would imagine if you could get Craig Allen as a customer,
Oh my gosh.
You'd forever have customers. Cause I mean, he buys and sells his own cars so many times. It's crazy.
He absolutely does. But the only thing that sucks about that is like when friends ask me if I can post a listing for them, I'm like, yeah, sure. And I just do it for free anyways, but don't tell anyone, right? Not everyone's going to hear this, but yeah, it really is. Like,
don't bet on that.
Yeah. Yeah. When competitors ask me, especially, I'm just like, oh yeah, I'll just post it for you for free. But yeah, they earned it by being competitors and being awesome.
Right.
Yeah. That's Rock Polish for Sale.
Cool. Anything else you got going like that? A business that's not your, not the banking?
No, the only other one I have is Delta. That's it. It's our LLC that we started for Delta Classic. But yeah. Yeah. Well, I probably should have more side hustles, but yeah.
Let's talk about Delta.
Let's do it.
So, we brought in Jake as a partner with WeRock. So we mm-hmm. were looking at what events we were going to continue to do. Jake was going to be taking all of the equipment and stuff. So I was like, you know, well, I'm not going to buy more equipment to continue doing Delta. Plus physically, I just was like, you know, I'm kind of done. You know, I'm 65 now. It's a lot of hard work. If anybody has never set up an event site for rock crawling, they have no clue.
It's the worst.
They just show up and it's like, oh, hey, look at all the cones are up. All the banners are up. All this is up. All that's up. Let's go play. And then it's got to all come down again. So, yep. You know, after 23 years of that, I was like, okay, I'm kind of done. So had a couple of people ask about Delta and you and Ryan were the ones that stood out in our mind that were the best choice to take it over, so for longevity. So when we asked Jake, you know, do you still want to do Delta? You know, it's not part of the series. And he goes, no, I want to stick to just series events. I said, okay, great. So we called you guys and you guys jumped on it and took it over. And so talk about what you guys have done and what kind of the plans are in the future.
Sure. Yeah, we were really excited. And actually, when you finally said to Ryan, like, hey, this is yours if you want it, he called me up and told me, like, yeah, like, looks like I'm doing Delta. And I was like, oh, cool. That'll be really fun for you, you know, because I didn't know if I was in on it. And he's like, oh, no, you have to help me. And I was like, all right. And then we were both like, we need someone else that's responsible. And that's where we picked our other buddy, Jeff. We need an adult almost, you know, to help us run this deal. So we asked Jeff if Jeff Former could help us. And yeah, it's been quite the experience. Definitely kind of makes me realize how much work goes into running an event, obviously. Setting courses is just like such a disaster. It is so much work. We took 2 full days to set courses this year. And it's just, I don't know. Delta has been a wild ride. But that being said, like, we wanted to make sure the event kept going, right? It's a small town. It's about all they have there, if we're being honest. Obviously, you've been there. It's such right. a tiny town that it's probably the only reason people drive into that town is to come to the rock crawl.
Or they get stuck on 50 and have it. To drive through.
Yeah, yeah. They don't have a choice but to pass through there. Yeah.
And then when they come through, it's like, what is this?
Yeah. Yeah, well, and it's the coolest thing ever, too. That's where Ryan and I both got our start in rock crawling. And it's right off of the main road. You see the tube, you know, the ridiculously huge obstacles. And it's just like, what is that? Like, what other county has that in their fairgrounds? Like, all these man-made obstacles. But so they really make it easy and attractive for us to want to do it. And that's that, along with you guys handing it over to us. We're just like, you know what? We're going to do this thing. So, and it just went down last weekend, and it was amazing. Like, we had 38 competitors, you know, we had 33 last year, there were 22 the year before. So it's growing consistently. And that was even with like all the Idaho guys, the Mercers, and some of the Terraflex guys couldn't make it because they had like graduations and stuff for their kids.
Right.
So it just kind of fell in like on a bad weekend for some people, which happens. But so yeah, we could have easily had, you know, like 48 people for what it's worth. But It was just a riot. Like at the end of the first day, Ryan and I both agreed, like, let's never do this again. But once the event is over, after the second day, it's just, yeah, you're showered with people just being like, hey guys, thanks for putting this on. Like, this is the coolest. Like, my family had so much fun. And it's just, I don't know. It's very rewarding. Let's put it that way. I'm still a little bit on a high from it for sure.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard work, but the accolades and the thank yous, and mm-hmm. when you get done with it and you see all the smiles on everybody's faces and, you know, everybody's having a good time, sure. you know, it really, it keeps you energized.
Sure. And I mean, also all the social media posts that are still happening about it, that I'm just, you know, sharing to our story and stuff. Like, it's just insane. Like, how many people absolutely love the event. People are begging for a second event every year. And we're like, you guys trying to kill us. But
you could do, yeah, Labor Day weekend, right?
I don't want to do that because it's right before Nationals, you know, that's another true. Kind of big event.
Yeah.
still got to make it to that one. So we've discussed maybe doing something in October, but we've also wondered about doing kind of a training style event to take people out there and just show them like some basic rock crawling stuff. And I think that would actually go really well. But yeah, it's a special event. And I have to say, your granddaughter, Peyton, she was spotting for Little Rich.
Yeah.
And I was doing, he was running Legends courses and she was spotting, and she's the cutest thing ever. It was so hilarious. She was holding her hands next to each other. He's like, how far away am I from the cones? And I was judging like right there. And she held her hands together next to each other. And she's like, held them up. She's like, two of my tiny hands. That's how far away from the cone you are. And I was just like, I was just dying, you know, as a father with a daughter, especially. I'm just like, that is so adorable. And then on another course with me, he's like, where's the cone at? And she held her hand straight up in the air like we normally do. And then she patted the cone three or four times. The cone's right here. And I'm like, oh my gosh. Like, because obviously you're not supposed to touch the cones, right?
Right.
There's no way I'm calling that penalty on her. I was just laughing my head off. And I told Rich about it after. But dude, just, it was so adorable watching her spot. And he is effectively walking her through what to do. Like, she didn't do much, let's put it that way, except for being cute and dancing around on course. He was saying like, okay, now go to the other side and tell me where that cone is. It was so fun. And we actually have a couple of teams out there that are like, we have another father and son team, the guys from Terraflex, Ben,
right.
He's the CEO or president or whatever of Terraflex. His son, Tiancum, spots for him, and then they swap, and you know, the other one drives. And watching them on course is hilarious. Just huge smiles. And dude, they're driving TJs on 40s with manual transmissions. And it's just, yeah, I respect that he's 16 years old, right? And he's just, yeah, going out there and beating on his TJ. It's just cool. The family aspect of Delta is one of the things that's always been attractive to me. Like, it just brings out people that normally wouldn't compete. And we don't know why that is, because I've always obviously been an advocate of people going to Wii Rock events. But for some reason, they just think, just like we did when we started, like, oh, it's too big time, you know? And it's like,
yeah,
nah,
it's going to be too
out.
Hard. It's too, I hear yeah. that all across the country.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, and it's not. I mean, that's why we started the sportsman classes and have the tamer obstacles, you know? Yeah, yeah. The pro courses. I tell people the first time they come out, you know, they'll call and they'll say, you know, well, yeah, I want to come out and do the pro courses, you know? And I'm like, what are you driving? Oh, I'm driving a Toyota pickup truck. It's linked though. It's full body. I'm like, you really want to try the other ones first.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, first time Uriel came out.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
With the Undertakers. It was him and Jeremy Hammer and a couple of others. I just remember those two specifically. And mm-hmm. I had gotten called by Andrew McLaughlin and said, hey, you know, we're with the Undertakers. You know, we're the most extreme hardcore rock crawling club in America. And
the Arizona guys, right?
Yeah, the Arizona guys. And we want to come out and compete at Wii Rock, but we don't want to be on the easy courses. We want to be on the hard stuff because that's all we drive is real hard stuff. And I said, well, tell you what. Come out and run the sportsman classes on day one. And then if you guys are not happy with the courses and you think they're too easy, we'll move Ooh. You over. We'll move your group over to the big courses, the A courses, and then you can give it a try. And yeah. after that first day, I asked him, I said, so where do you guys want to run tomorrow? Oh, we'll stay on the C courses. Because it's still extremely difficult wheeling.
Yeah, that's funny. Those are some names I haven't thought about for a while. Yeah, the Arizona guys. There's no one's more hardcore than Arizona guys. Just ask an Arizona guy.
Right. Yep. I gotta say, I love them all, though.
Oh, yeah, for sure. For sure. I absolutely do, too. Even we've had some rocky times with Arizona guys in Sportsman C with just they got sick of losing to us, you know. There's really no other way to put it. And they're going to love that. They're going to love hearing that from me. But
then they need to come back out and whip on you. Yeah,
they're going to be throwing their phones when they hear that on when they listen to the podcast. But yeah, I really wish that we could break down that stigma that it's too hard, that we rock's too serious. Because dude, we've had so much fun on courses, just laughing our heads off. Yeah, and judging each other. Oh my gosh, the amount of like advice I've given people while I'm judging, I'm basically spotting them at this point, you know, or like holding the banner out of their way so they can turn, like. Yeah, it's not too hard. It's not too serious. Everyone should definitely do it. There should be no doubts. But did you see any of my posts about people turning around on top of the tube in Delta?
I saw the video of Dave Wong doing it.
Dude, it was so crazy. Like, it really is one of those things that a few years ago, like, I never would have even thought of that. We hadn't thought of it, right?
Right.
Like, but apparently Dave was telling Rich, you know, since Little Rich was spotting for him, telling him, this doesn't, like, I don't like this. This doesn't feel good. And Rich essentially told him to shut up. Shut up and drive, pretty much. But, yeah, and as you know, with man-made courses, like, coming up with stuff for people to do year after year after year gets challenging. But
right,
2 years, we've had good luck with it. We've made courses that were challenging. Too challenging for some people. A couple people rolled their cars.
Well, you know what? Yeah. You can have it on flat ground and you put someone cones out there and people will figure out how to roll.
Yeah, that's for sure. It's just hate to see it happen. But on the flip side, there are people out there like having the time of their lives, you know, like we had people that have been competing there for like 10 years that this dude, Jeremy, finally got the win. But while he's on course, like when I'm clear over across all the way across the grounds, I hear him go over a bonus obstacle and everyone in the crowd is just screaming. Like, it's so cool to see stuff happen for people and how thrilled they are about, you know, securing a win or finishing a course and that's why we do it. Right. Like, it is supposed to be fun and we're supposed to enjoy it. But yeah, Delta has been quite the endeavor that I don't know. I don't see when it's coming to an end at this point. So,
well, that's good to hear. So what's the website?
DeltaClassicRockCrawl.com.
Okay.
Yep. And then on Instagram, it's the same thing. Delta Classic Rock Crawl, same with Facebook. And yeah, I really encourage people to ask questions if they have them, because I'm the one that's in charge of all the social media. And so when they ask questions, I get right back to them. And I think that's gotten a lot of people involved just because, you know, it's easy to get a hold of me. And
absolutely.
I don't know. It's crazy.
Communication is key.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, excellent. I can't think of anything else that we've missed. Is there anything that you want to hit on?
Let me see. Let me look at what I have written down. Oh, just, man, to be a rock crawler's wife. That's one thing I can't even imagine.
Well, let's talk about that.
I have to give credit to my wife for sure. And I don't even know if she's going to listen, right? But I have to give credit to her because, yeah, just being gone, like my vacation days, like I have like assigned vacation days and hours have been used for rock crawling so much over the course of the last several years that it takes a very understanding wife to put up with that. And like the dates of We Rock events, like those are just like blacked out on our calendar. Like, yeah, sorry, we're not scheduling anything that weekend. The amount of stuff, the amount of holes she's wanted to make that were ruined by a We Rock event, it's insane. But she's always been supportive.
So I'm the awesome one that's on the fecal list.
Yeah, I could see that maybe. But it's just, and you know, I mean, I don't know you've probably heard this too, and you know it, but I don't know how you deserve Shelley, right? Like, Shelley's awesome. You don't deserve her. So you,
no,
you're
I
in
don't.
Good company here. Like, we both definitely don't deserve our awesome wives, but yeah, it's such a commitment big time. And when 2021 rolled around, I told her I was saving up my vacation for something. She thought I meant like a surprise vacation or something like that, like go on a cruise. No, what I meant was I was saving it up to do Super Crawl and We Rock. So that was a little bit of a miscommunication that kind of got me in trouble. But that was the craziest year ever. Like, well, I think we did 11 events that year. And that was all on Ryan because I wasn't competing. I took the year off. And it just felt like every 2 weeks we were going rock crawling. It was insane.
But, so I'm probably going to get myself in trouble and all the rock crawlers in trouble with their wives. There's a guy I know that told me one time that I said, you know, I never see your wife at the events. You know, is she cool with it? And he goes, oh, yeah, she loves me buying parts and going to events. And I said, well, why is that? And he goes, because the same amount of money that I spend on parts, she gets to spend on whatever she wants. And the amount of time that I get to go to events, we have to plan around vacations as well so that we can do what she wants to do.
Yeah.
And I'm wow, you better not tell anybody else that.
Nobody else's wives better find out. That's an agreement they can make.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it really does take quite a bit of vacation because when we're not at events, we're working on our rigs, right? Like,
yep.
That's the unfortunate is that reality. We're working on our rigs, but yeah, my wife's really understanding about it. And when I'm home, I try to be really present and I'm with my kids all the time. So
that's
important. That really helps. But yeah, I can't imagine it not being that way either.
Well,
that's
yeah,
supportive one of the, wife. Yeah.
That's one of the things that I thought was really important about you guys taking over Delta was that, you know, we took it over because we didn't want to see it go away. But
yeah,
that's the kind of event that needed that personal attention of somebody that lives in the area so that they could be talking to potential sponsors and wheelers and everybody else that might be coming to the event on almost a daily basis.
Yep.
You know, and knowing that Ryan was in the business and that you guys were, you know, were in that area and you guys had been wheeling for years. It just made sense.
Yeah. And it's a quick 2-hour trip for us. Like for the couple weeks before the event, we go down on Saturday or Sunday morning and spend all day down there setting up course and then burn home, you know, and be home for dinner. So yeah, it definitely absolutely helps for sure. And just, yeah, people, I think people identify well with people that are local to it, right?
Or local-ish.
So it definitely helps. But yeah, we really appreciate the opportunity to take over the event. So I'm glad you guys picked Ryan and then Ryan picked me to help him.
Right. Well, I knew that you were going to come along with Ryan. I mean, that's just, you know, it's Ryan like buying a left hand. You don't go out and buy a left-handed glove. You know, you buy a pair of gloves and that's what we were looking at is you guys being that pair of gloves.
Yep. We are quite the pair. That's for sure.
Well, Nate, I want to say thank you so much for coming out and spending some time and talking to us about your life, about the stories that you've told and about Delta. And everybody remember Delta Classic Rock Crawl is going to stick around and that, you know, they should talk to you on social media and get involved.
100%. Yeah. And I just want to say thanks for all that you've done over the, you know, last 20 some years. Keep the sport alive. There were some dark times, you know, some not good attendance and you guys kept it alive and thank goodness for your awesome wife, Shelley, right?
Yeah.
to help keep you on the path to keep it alive. So,
yeah. Cause like,
I know she's behind it. So
like I said, for years, you know, in 2009, that was going to be my last year.
Yeah.
You know, I just looked at it like, you know what? This is the economy sucked. The attendance was sucking. You know, trying to get sponsors to help or marketing partners to help, you know, to make it happen just sucked. And it was way too much work. And there was way too many personal problems that I was going through at the time. And it was just like, I give up. You know, I'm done. And she was like, no, I'm retiring. I want to keep this going because I don't want to I don't want you to go to get into regular job. So yeah, let's go out and do this full time and let's figure out a way to do it. And, you know, with her help, we were able to do that. And I'm glad it happened.
Yeah. Thank goodness for that. My life would be very different in a lot of lives. So
yes,
we appreciate you guys for sure. Big.
All right. Well, Nate, thank you so much. And, again, you know, it's been a pleasure knowing you, and, that relationship will continue on.
Same. Thanks, Big.
All right. Take care. Bye.
All right. See you later. Bye.
Well, that's another episode of Conversations with Big Rich. I'd like to thank you all for listening. If you could do us a favor and leave us a review on any podcast service that you happen to be listening on, or send us an email or a text message or a Facebook message, and let me know any ideas that you have, or if there's anybody that you have that you think would be a great guest, please forward the contact information to me so that we can try to get them on. And always remember, live life to the fullest. Enjoying life is a must. Follow your dreams and live life with all the gusto you can. Thank you.